A very good morning and welcome to the Big Sports Breakfast this Tuesday, the 28th of June. Wimbledon is underway and some Aussies are already through, and the news and chatter from Origin 2 just won't quieten, with some big ins and outs likely for round 16 of the NRL this weekend. The regular team are taking a break and Matt Burke is in with me, Ryan Phelan, this morning. G'day, Burkey. Good to see you. And isn't it just amazing how the Origin talk just keeps on chattering, even though we're up more than 24 hours since the final whistle was blown.
Ryan, good morning to you. It's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? And when you look at the wash-up of the game, that great analogy of afterwards, of tail between your legs when you lose. And we saw Queensland, you know, coming home last night. They had the red eye out of Perth, which just adds injury to insult. You've got that, what is it, 11:55 flight out of Perth to get home. But I mean, they got back to Queensland. They looked tired. They looked sore. They looked dejected. And then you run through some of the stats that that are coming out of the game with missed tackles and penalties and the rest of it, and some potential injuries as well to both teams too. More notably, Cameron Munster with a shoulder. So headaches for both coaches, but Freddie would be smiling a little bit easier than Billy Slater at the moment.
Yeah, and just out of the game, obviously there was a number of players placed on report. New South Wales halfback Nathan Cleary, one of those. Also Queensland's winger Murray Taulagi. They both escaped any charge for those separate incidents during game two. The only player charged from the game was Blues hooker Damien Cook. He will escape with a fine, though, for that cannonball tackle, that third man in tackle, yeah, on Harry Grant, which is, I mean, it's not a good look. We've got to do something to rub that out, but he'll escape with a fine.
It is, and it's one of those ones where, as a player, you understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to bring the player down, but when you're already 99% of the way done, and I understand they want to, you know, it's a war of attrition, but it's a bad look, it's a bad feel. So many injuries, I reckon, could come from that, and you're only lucky not to get injured. But it'll be a chat too from the coach in that space, from the tackling point of view. But yeah, you talk about again, you talk about that sort of, yeah, that looking ahead now for game three, going to Queensland, and I thought Billy Slater said it well the other day, you know, and it was a tough press conference for him afterwards. But when he said, you know, we go to Queensland, that doesn't mean we're going to win. We've still got to prepare well and get a team that's going to be able to beat this New South Wales outfit and up there. And then you look at the history. You know, we speak about the history the whole time. And yeah, the great part about history is that it can be rewritten. I mean, you go up there to a field that's 100 metres long, it's 65 metres wide, it's got posts and a ground. But there's something about playing in certain places. For us, it was Eden Park back over in Auckland when we played. We never won, literally never won. I think the last time the Aussies won there was 1986. The last time anyone else won there was like 1984, I think it was, or 1990, pardon me, France. And you just think, it shouldn't be that hard, but it is. Somehow it is, and it gets into your head.
Yeah. Now, the fallout, as you mentioned, injury-wise, Kalyn Ponga won't play for the Knights this weekend. He copped that head knock in that game. So that's his second in as many weeks. So he'll be ruled out for that game. Payne Haas, now he's in a moon boot at the moment. So we'll wait and see whether he takes on the Cowboys this weekend. And Cameron Munster, as you mentioned, in major doubt to take on Manly. So, yeah, it's, you know, a couple of concerns for both sides ahead of Origin 3. What's interesting yesterday, one of the players that will play this weekend, and he will be the sole focus for a lot of people, not just Brad Fittler, will be South star Latrell Mitchell, who returns. It was interesting seeing yesterday via social media, there was a chain of conversation about who should be picked in the centres for New South Wales. And Latrell actually weighed into it, and he said Burton can have the number four, pretty much saying that he's ready to take the number three again. Brad Fittler had a laugh at that himself and said, oh, what, Latrell is playing selector now, is he? But it's interesting because Latrell Mitchell, we touched on it yesterday, didn't we? A fully fit Latrell Mitchell, you would sort of think he would maybe have to get picked. He's been one of New South Wales' best players in recent years. Stephen Crichton has probably had a mixed state of origin, I think it's fair to say, albeit he was probably wrongly selected off the bench in game one. He wasn't too bad in game two, but he hasn't shone like a Latrell Mitchell has in past seasons. So it's going to be interesting. A fully fit and starring Latrell Mitchell this weekend, does he get picked for game three?
The interesting part about that Stephen Crichton, for example, that selection is that you're expected to do a job straight away. And there's no time to sort of settle in on that big stage. And you sometimes need a couple of games just to sort of, you know, get more comfortable at that level, because it is faster. It is more brutal. You know, you talk about time and space with the ball in these games, and you have less time and less space with the ball because the game is so much quicker. So Stephen Crichton, just a fraction off. Talented player, absolutely. You know what he's done for Penrith. But then when you got the chance to play, and we saw it the other night with Matt Burton, you know, silky skills for that sort of catch pass, chase that ball down to score that try, put that boot in. So he got involved in the game. And I reckon Crichton, the ball sort of went away from him a couple of times. It didn't come his side. So he didn't get involved as much as he could have. Latrell, you know, when he's on song, wow. You know, like that, he's a big body. He's got the skills to be able to do it. He's silky. He's got the swagger as well. You know, he's got that arrogance of sort of, look at me, how good am I? And he's happy to point to the camera and say, did you get that? Because there's more of that coming. So the question then becomes, as you said, Ryan, the question then becomes, has he got enough game time under his belt? And we spoke about it yesterday. You can train as much as you want off the field, but there's nothing like playing a game, getting hit, getting down, getting that push in the face.
And we often hear Origin is at a different pace.
A whole new level, absolutely. And you talk about that speed, and then it's not so much the hit up, which is the problem. It's the giddy up and recovery to go again. You know, that repeat effort that they need so much in Origin. And when you see guys like Api Korosau, Damien Cook coming out of dummy half and going bang, 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 getting that quick play the balls, then you think, wow, this is the speed that you're at. And if you're lagging out the back because you've got a ball and chain hanging on your leg because you're not fit enough, then you get exposed.
Yeah, and the interesting second tier, I suppose, to Latrell Mitchell playing selector, not just picking himself, but picking Matt Burton to remain in the centres. And where does that leave Jack Whiten, who was superb in game one as well? So it's a good headache to have for Freddie Fittler, isn't it? When you consider he made those wholesale changes ahead of game two, they were controversial in some sections of the media. He got the synergy absolutely right. Yeah. And now he's almost got an embarrassment of riches ahead of game
three. And that's always a good decision, isn't it? You'd rather have those players on song and make the hard call. And it seems like Brad is able to do that. Fittler's able to do that, to say, hey, you know, and he's got that probably mentality and that niceness as a coach, if that's the word, that when he tells you dropped, you sort of go, oh, okay, Freddie, or no worries, or you haven't been selected, rather than getting it from a harder line coach where you might sort of resent the fact. It's a hard place to be, you know, and I've been there as a player when you get that tap on the shoulder and say, you know, you're not wanted this weekend or not wanted down the track. And it's a tough one to swallow. You know, it's a bitter pill to swallow because you want to be around and in that team. The irony of it is, you know, if you get an injury or even, for example, Damien Cook, for example, you know, gets relegated to the bench, albeit those players get a lot of game time, you're not in that first squad, and all of a sudden you get, you know, Api Korosau gets a start, they get the win, they win by plenty, and it's like, well, am I going to get that starting jumper back now, or am I going to be relegated to the bench? So fortune favours the brave, and sometimes fortune is just in that literally blink of an eye that you're in the right place at the right time.
What about this, Berkey? I was trawling through some tab markets yesterday, and it's amazing what that game two has done because it's completely swapped around. New South Wales are now favourites for game three, $1.65, and Queensland $2.25. I mean, if you'd isolate the games individually, game one, you would absolutely say Queensland can win the series now. Game two, you'd say, well, New South Wales are favourites to win the series, and that's where we're at. But they probably were a stark contrast, those two games. Bear in mind, Queensland did it in New South Wales. Yes, New South Wales did it in Perth, but now New South Wales has to do it in Queensland, which, as you mentioned, is a completely different thing. This was the other market that caught my interest. Player of the series, which is the Wally Lewis medal. Who do you think would be favourite to win that? Obviously, it's the best player over the three games.
The three games. Well, you'd throw in a Cameron Munster to start with. That first game, well, half a game in Sydney, he was outstanding.
He was man of the match.
He admitted that himself. His first half wasn't fantastic. Then you chuck in the fold Nathan Cleary.
Who was
man of the match in game two. But it's consistency on the way through there. So the third game, does it revolve around a half or a fullback in that space? I thought Tedesco was outstanding in that second game.
You've got the box trifecta.
There we go.
So there you go. So there's the player of the series market, but not in that particular order. Nathan Cleary is the favourite at $2.25.
Yeah.
Bear in mind how much he got panned in game one.
Yes.
Cam Munster, who was outstanding, one of the better Queensland performances in recent memory in game one, was pretty good in game two, $3.50, second favourite. James Tedesco, who has been very, very good in both games, is $7.50. Bear in mind, five of the last six winners of the Wally Lewis medal have been in the back five, which is interesting. So you would think, as you said, it would have been a half or 5'8 dominated medal, but only one halfback or 5'8 has actually won in the past 10 years, and that was Cameron Munster in 2020.
Yeah, right.
It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? So 2011 was Cam Smith, 2012 Nate Miles, 2013 Cameron Smith, 2014 Paul Gallen, 2015 Corey Parker, 2016 Cameron Smith, 2017 Dane Gagai, 2018 Billy Slater, 2019 James Tedesco, 2020 Cameron Munster, and 2021 Tom Trbojevic.
Yeah.
I just found that quite fascinating that we're always talking. I mean, bear in mind, in that time was Jonathan Thurston.
Yeah, true.
You know, Cooper Cronk.
Yeah. Queensland had a hard time of it sharing around the spoils at that stage there. So, I mean, if you have a dominant figure like a Cleary or a halfback or a 5'8 type thing, most of the play is going to go off them, obviously. You know, Tedesco, I thought, was just outstanding the other night in his ability to. And we expect the forwards to hit up. When we saw the Trbojeviches and crew hitting up, making hard yards, pardon me, making good yards, solid yards, then Tedesco takes the ball out of dummy half and he was pushing blokes out of the way. Mm. Like, I want to get this ball. And he would hit and he would wrestle and he would turn his back and he would walk backwards and he would make 15, 20 metres out of a single run, out of a single play. And that must just, when you look around, as your captain doing that, and then also... And he's a big boy anyhow, but he's not as big as obviously some of the forwards. You just go like you clap your hands and say, if we can rely on this bloke to do that for us, we're gonna go okay today. So it'll be an interesting one. I think Tedesco he'd be up there. He'd be the smoky, I reckon, at the moment because obviously what he does off the ball is quite incredible. I think Joey said the other day, how many Tedescos are there out there? Because it's like there's four or five. He was everywhere the other night.
He's a human energizer bunny in those first two games, absolutely for sure and certain. A break on the Big Sports Breakfast. We'll have newspaper headlines next. Now let's start with the Sydney Morning Herald, where Michael Chamis is saying that Luke Brooks has been handed a stay of execution by coach Brett Camorley. And most interestingly, Brett Camorley has emerged as a leading contender for the vacant West Tigers head coaching role for next season. He says sources with knowledge of the situation have told the Herald that the club has been impressed by the way that Brett Camorley has gone about his job since the sacking of Michael Maguire, despite the run of losses continuing under his watch. I've had a lot to do with Brett Camorley in a professional sense. Mm. One of the loveliest blokes and professional guys you'd meet. So interesting to see that he's been strongly considered for that role, which was recently passed over by Cameron Seraldo. So who knows if he happens to string a few wins together, Noddy could get the nod.
Has he got the mentality, the temperament to be able to be under the spotlight in that space? I mean, that's the biggest one. You know, it's imagine it's obviously moulding a team together, but it's the scrutiny that he caught from, say, us and other entities that would be the hardest part about the job, I imagine.
I think he would deal with that facet of it quite well, Noddy. I think he would deal with the media and the pressure of the situation quite well. It's, I guess, how players respond to you nowadays as well. Noddy is a lovely guy, a very nice guy, and I'm not necessarily saying to that you need to be tough or, quite abrasive, you know, as a coach, or distance yourself, I guess, from the familiarity of dealing with players. But, you know, that's something for other people to decide. But I think he would deal with the pressure well. I think he'd certainly deal with the media well.
Yeah, right. Someone who certainly, well, this is the hashtag here, deals with the media well, Nick Kyrgios. We've got our Wimbledon campaign
underway.
Well,
he's in the media a lot.
At the moment, exactly right. And he's spoken out before the tournament has started, basically condemning Wimbledon with the ban of the Russian players to come and play, obviously, with the war in Ukraine. So he's spoken about that as well and said, disagrees with the decision and believes all the Russian players should have been invited to play. And he may be on a lone crusade there at the moment, but certainly it's a controversial call anyhow before the tournament. He also just threw out a little curveball and said the stuffy rules of Wimbledon. Obviously, it's the All Whites that they have to play there. And he called it uncool rules, declaring they've got everything wrong. Now, why? Because he likes to wear black. His favourite colour is black, so he wants to wear black. So he can't even wear a black headband or a black wristband. He wants to be dressed fully in black. So, unfortunately, Nick, for the time being, Wimbledon means you have to wear all white. So he's created a little bit of a stir before his first match.
The Johnny Cash of tennis, eh? The man in black. A lot of the papers are talking about the cricket test, which gets underway, Australia versus Sri Lanka tomorrow night. And Australia are leaning towards John Holland over Matt Koonerman as Nathan Lyon's spin partner against Sri Lanka, backing the accuracy of the finger spin over the wristy revolutions of Mitch Swepson. Holland, who toured with Australia as far back as 2009, he had an unhappy time in 2016 when also drafted into the Sri Lanka series in place of Steve O'Keefe. They're saying Glenn Maxwell may also get a late call-up to Australia's injury-hit test squad, but is confident that he can make the difference in Sri Lanka's spinning conditions. Bear this in mind, Maxwell, who's 33 years of age, he's played just 7 tests in the last 5 years, and all away in Asian countries. He has a test batting average of 26 and a bowling average of 43 for his 8 wickets. So that's some selection news ahead of that test series tomorrow night. Some great guests coming up on the show today. Dan McKellar will join us just after 6:40. Dan, obviously a lot of you will know him as the former coach of the ACT Brumbies, now the forwards coach with the Wallabies, and we'll talk about their upcoming test against England this Saturday. Clint Gutherson will join us fresh from the Origin camp, and he will take his place for Parramatta this weekend. We'll speak to Clint also in the next hour or so. Adam Pengelly from the Sydney Morning Herald will join us. Chris Lawrence, former West Tiger, one of the legends of the club. He's doing some things for Beanies for Brain Cancer round this weekend, so it'll be terrific to catch up with Chris. And Danny Weidel will talk all things rugby league. And, of course, Brad Davidson will talk racing as well and hopefully find us a winner or two. He's certainly got his eye in lately. So this is the Big Sports Breakfast. Matt Burke in with me this morning. Plenty to come. We'll take your calls as well. 1353 on the open line number and the SMS 0419 767 272. We want you to be part of the show. It's the Big Sports Breakfast. Stay with us throughout the morning. Good to have you with us on the BSB. The regular team taking a break this week. Matt Burke and Ryan Phelan in with you. Jamie is taking a break this morning as well. And we're taking your calls on the open line number 1353 in the SMS as well, 0419 767 272. Just before we get to those texts, Wimbledon is underway. I'd just like to update you on some of those scores. Currently, we have Andy Murray on court against James Duckworth. Duckworth won the first set there, but Andy Murray has won the next two. So that match might even be suspended due to light, just the way some of the outside courts are going at the moment. Some of those other Australian results: Max Purcell lost to Adrian Mannarino in 5 sets. John Millman lost to Medea Kecmanovic in 4 sets. And in the women's, Del McGalphy beat Aussie Madison Inglis in 3 sets as well. Astra Sharma, she was 1 set apiece against Tayana Maria. But that match has been paused due to bad light. So really the only one that we're keeping an eye at the moment is James Duckworth, and that match currently in the fourth set. Now tonight, Nick Kyrgios will take on Paul Jubb. Alex de Minaur will take on Hugo Delian. Jordan Thompson will take on Roberto Buena Carbeas. And Alex Popperin will take on Hugo Gaston. Interestingly, all the Aussie men are favourites in their respective matches. So hopefully a good night for the Aussie men. And in the women's tonight, Zoe Hives, Daria Saville, Jamie Fawless and Isla Tomljanovic will be in action. So mixed results for the Aussies so far on day one, but hopefully things get a little bit better this evening when we see the Aussies on court there tonight, which will be highlighted by not the man in black this year, but he wants to be the man in black, Nick Kyrgios.
Nick Kyrgios, it's interesting, he came out with that call yesterday and said, I want to make the top 10, what was it? I want to whip them, I'm whipping boys. So he has got the skill. We spoke to Roger Rashid yesterday. He's got incredible skill. And, you know, I think the rest of Australia sit back and think, you know, wow, how good is this kid? If he has his head in the right spot, you know, and look, is he a shot to win this? You know, absolutely. He's playing some good tennis. He just has to get that mentality right, that temperament right, especially, you know, when it's just you and you've got no one else to blame when you're out in the court there. He seems to find other people to blame except for himself. So the courts of Wimbledon suit him and will suit his game as well. So, yeah, good luck to Kyrgios and the rest of our Aussies.
A few texts coming through this morning. And just from a technical point of view, a number of people are coming through from the Newcastle area saying you're struggling to hear through the app or Sky Racing Media. We have got our techs onto that. So hopefully we will rectify that issue as soon as possible and you can be listening to the program. Now, we're told it's fixed now. So hopefully everything will be okay. If it's not, send us through a text and we'll get them back onto it. Now, we were talking before about Latrell Mitchell and whether if he's 100% fit, will he play? And there's a lot of texts on that this morning, Berkey. This one, Latrell only needs to be 80% fit and he should be good enough to play. So, you know, a lot of people are suggesting that he would be, you know, ready to go. There's another one here. Where is it? Boys, for Origin 3, Whiten to replace Crichton and Latrell off the bench instead of Talakai. That one from Dave. But then where does that leave Matt Burton? You know, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Matt Burton with one game hard to drop, but then Jack Whiten, who was probably one of New South Wales' best in a losing game one, only couldn't be selected for game two due to COVID. You would think Freddie, for as loyal and fierce as he was in defending his place in game one, you would think Freddie would want to move him back in there somewhere.
Back in either. I mean, he's big enough to play a very much versatile role to maybe, you know, get in the back row as well. I suppose the other question is, how much of effect does COVID have on these players after they're coming back, you know, for the lungs and their strength and that kind of stuff? So that's obviously what you've got to take into account too. Obviously, by that stage there, it'll be a couple of weeks out. It was only unlucky that he got Crook. I see Burton as a player that's going to be in and amongst that team for a long time. You know, and then when he got, we spoke about it yesterday, that cohesion factor, and when he got back with his old crew of the Penrith boys, there just seemed to be something that clicked there. The weak link the other day was Crichton, and for the sake of maybe the ball didn't go his way, but he didn't get involved as much, and maybe that's a strategy of where, you know, New South Wales aimed their attack down that left hand side there. But certainly, you know, Burton's response and ability to execute under pressure was fantastic on the big stage. Does he fit in the team? I don't know if he does, as in Latrell Mitchell. I don't know if he fits in the team. I think he needs to have more games under his belt. And I know people are going to come out and say, no, an 80% fit Latrell Mitchell will be okay. I think he needs just games under his belt to get the engine going, so to speak, and get back in the mould. Look, I'm happy to be proved wrong. You know, if he gets out there, because what he does is that X factor. Absolutely. You know, when he has that ability to all of a sudden flick a switch and use his size, use his speed, and he's got that ability to offload, and it's great to watch. the consistency, though, of being able to go again, go again, go again. I think Burton's use now of that left foot, right foot combination in the kicking area was underutilized.
Yep.
And for the point where, from the kicking option, Cleary got caught a couple of times. So basically, you know, you throw the ball left of the ruck of the play of the ball, and he's coming back at it to kick a right foot kick. So he's getting pressure on him there. So what you do there is you throw left, you hit left. So that's where Burton should be lining up to that right or that left side and clear to the right side. So they've got options to go either way, which then just makes a whole new world to how you defend at the back there, if you know what I mean. So how many guys do you have back for a left foot kick, a right foot kick, covering either a 40-20? There's options on.
And that's a good point, because it's not necessarily who we think New South Wales should pick. It's who Queensland won't want New South Wales to pick. I think Queensland could counter a Stephen Crichton. They could counter a Jack Whiten. But if you have Latrell Mitchell, that's X factor in a team. And when you've got Matt Burton, that's a kicking game that you have to plan for, whether it be second tier, third tier kicking game. But that's something that they would do video on,
an
Queensland.
Extra. Yes.
You know, so that's they're two players that they wouldn't want picked.
Yeah, that's true.
So that has to be a factor, surely, in Freddie's thinking.
And when you're sitting at training there, and we saw it the other day, there's some vision of Tedesco catching high balls when they're over in Perth. And catching a high ball is not too hard. Catching a ball that nearly went outside the Optus Stadium roof the other day, as in it was like about equivalent to it. And you saw that one just kept on falling away, that spiral type kick that he gets. And it's great. It's old school torpy. I mean, we haven't seen that for so long. It's normally this, you know, the new world or the end-over-end AFL type kick, which is actually quite easy to catch. Those spiral ones come down and they fall away from you. And if you can have that, if you catch it, you do well, but you're catching it in the most, awkward position. Because as we saw the other day, the Queensland defender has got his back towards, he then knocks it on or knocks it backwards, then goes straight to ground. So you're going to get an add-on effect from that rather than just a normal kick. So I think just for Burton's kicking game, it's just another tick in the box for him to keep his position.
A lot of our listeners, Berkey, are hard and on rugby league supporters. So I'm hoping this morning you can give us a bit of a cheats guide to the upcoming test series against England for the Wallabies. Because if we're, you know, have been in the rugby wilderness for the last few years, we would think, well, how are we going, the Wallabies, at the moment? Because particularly when you consider that the rivalry between these two sides in recent times, England have won 8 in a row, including a 3-0 whitewash last time they toured down here in Australia. In fact, they have not lost to the Wallabies since Eddie Jones is in charge. But yet everything I'm reading and hearing is that this is Australia's best chance to end what has been a pretty barren run against England. So give us a snapshot about the expectations ahead of this series.
The expectations, I think, at the moment, Ryan, are that there's competitiveness around all the positions in amongst this Wallaby squad there. So if you go to the world ranking at the moment, South Africa are on top, France are second, New Zealand third. And by product of France playing the Six Nations just gone, which was in February, obviously, with the games coming up, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa will play those test matches and accrue ranking points. Ireland are 4, England 5, Australia 6, Scotland 7. So all of a sudden you look at that and you think, wow, Australia 6, you know, that's a long way down. But that's sort of where we've been for the last sort of period of time. You know, go back to 2015 Rugby World Cup when Australia made the final and played against New Zealand. That was the Michael Checky era. That was the last time Australia beat England in that pool match there at Twickenham. Bernard Foley had a fantastic game, scored about 24 points. And that was a dishevelled English team. That was when Sam Burgess was over in that England outfit. And there was a lot of sort of political manoeuvring in amongst the team there and who should have been in, who should not have been in there. Stuart Lancaster was a coach. He ended up getting sacked after that. Eddie Jones comes in, makes changes, makes mental changes to this team. He is a hard taskmaster, and he's had success with his England outfit. So all of a sudden, you've got this crew coming over to Australia, who last time they came down, 3 test series, as you said, won. But from Australian perspective, this Super Rugby season that we've just had was, I think, a bit of a watershed moment as well. Australian teams beat New Zealand teams when it went that Trans-Tasman. There was some good footy being played in amongst the AU scenario that we've had. Brumbies did well. Queensland did well. New South Wales were on a resurgence. Force and the Rebels weren't so much, but they still had some competitive games. The thing what Dave Rennie would be happy with is some competition amongst players now. So the difficult one at the moment is Tani Olatupo.
I was going to say, is the competition mainly in the forwards? Because it seems as though the back line, with regards to obviously the number 10 position,
yes,
but the rest of the back line seems to be
seems
set.
Pretty set, yeah. So you could argue a Nick White would be in that 9 role. You'd say, I think Quade Cooper will get the 10 role over Noah Lolasio and James O'Connor. James O'Connor had some injuries this year, obviously playing up in Queensland. Lolasio did well, but I think he's still learning, developing at that next level. There seemed to be a calmness about Cooper coming back. He seemed to be in his zen moment, if you call it that. He obviously contributed heavily to that win in over South Africa last year as well. Samu Karevi comes back. Those two boys have been playing in Japan. Marika Korobedi will fill one wing. He's been playing in Japan. The only real contentious point is the 15 role. Who actually goes there? So, you know, if you're coming through as a young bloke and wanted to play for the Wallabies, you want to play fullback because there's sort of no one there at the moment. Will Banks get the start? Potentially. He's safe in a Wallaby jersey. He'll give you a good game, a six, maybe a 6.5 out of 10, but we need someone who's going to be that 7.5, 8, 8.5. And is that a Jordan Pataia, for example, who's big, strong, gangly type runner, breaks tackles, but does he have the footballing nous to play that 15 role? The forwards has some good contests as well. The only problem is that Tani Olatupo. So, you know, he's a wrecking ball, no doubt about it. And where they'll need to be strong against England is up front. England have got a really good outfit up front. There's a couple of boys there, the Vunipola boys, Billy and Marco Vunipola. They've got size up there as well. And I think that's where the, as they always say, up front, the battle's going to be won. And so if Australia can get that 1-8, okay, and this is where we're going to talk to Dan McKellar about this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet you're looking forward to that because he'll give us some great insight.
And a little
forwards.
Bit of time, exactly right. And will they have the strength and mental capacity to be able to overcome this big pack? Can they win? You know, Australia, as we look at the tab, $1.52 to win against $2.45. Remembering it's the end of England's season, so Leicester and Saracens just played their grand final the other day, so a lot of the boys would have come out of that, and they would be tired for this trip. It's not too dissimilar to when our boys used to go over in November, December, and you play after at the back end of a long season. I think it's going to be fascinating. The biggest one is Perth. They're playing over in Perth. England are already there. Australia is still up in the Sunshine Coast. You know, was there merit in what the Origin boys did last week with New South Wales being over there, Queensland doing a fly-in, fly-out visit, trying a hit-and-run mission? Will the ground stack up? We saw the other night the ground was
very
falling
slippery,
apart.
Yeah.
You know, when you got, 2-ton, 3-ton of weight going through those scrums, will it disintegrate underfoot? So plenty of questions to be asked, and obviously we get the chance to talk to the assistant coach very soon.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. Dan McKellar will join us just after 6:30. So he's the Wallabies assistant coach, but many of you may know him as the coach formerly of the ACT Brumbies. So he'll give us some great insight into the Wallabies taking on England this weekend. Just on that, Berkey, rivalries, and you were in the Wallabies jumper many times. Obviously, New Zealand is our greatest rival,
yeah,
you know, being top of the tree and our cousins, of course. But where does the rivalry stack up against England?
It's up there because, you know, it's Big Brother, really, isn't it? You know, and there's a real drive and determination for England to beat Australia because, you know, we live in this country where, you know, we have facilities, we can go outdoors, we can play, we can train. Over there, it's difficult. It's wet, it's cold, it's difficult conditions, so you don't actually get out there as much. There's nothing like beating the Poms, though. There's just something. Nothing. I mean, there's a respect when you play the Kiwis because you know that if you play well against them and you get a victory, you've ticked a box. But there's nothing like getting one over the Poms because they like to gloat. The Poms, and it's, you know, we've even seen Eddie Jones come in. You know, Eddie Jones is Aussie through and through. He grew up in La Perouse type thing, you know, but he's adopted this English mentality where he loves to sledge and he loves to chuck it out there at anything to disrupt. And if England get a win, and we've seen it in the cricket, you know, if England get a win, there's a lot of hoopla that goes on there. So if you can quieten that down, it's a good day.
Looking forward to it. It all gets underway this Saturday. Taking your calls on the open line number 1353 53. Send us a text as well, 0419 767 272. Getting to those on the other side of this break on the Big Sports Breakfast. Big Sports Breakfast, give us a call on the open line this morning, 1353 53, and we'll be making you as part of the program. Send us an SMS as well, 0419 767 272. Speaking of the cricket, we know the Aussies get underway against Sri Lanka last night, but this one, no name on it. Did you see the cricket last night? Young Johnny Bairstow with another innings of glory. It's the ginger century. Wasn't he terrific? I know Bairstow was terrific in, I guess, limited games down here in Australia. Mm. He was really one of their shining lights, wasn't he? So good to see him in good form. And we were talking this morning about Latrell Mitchell. Does he come straight back in to the New South Wales side after what will be one hit out for Souths likely this weekend? The spotlight well and truly is on him. And certainly there's some text there as well. Smitty says, very hard to decide to pick the centres. If you look at Burton and Latrell, just as I say that, it goes off my screen. We're just having a few dramas with text this morning. Whiten, they're all left-side centres. So not to drop a specialist right-hand centre in Crichton to move to the left side really opens up more room for errors, a possibility there. So,
you don't want to take away one position to try and strengthen another.
Well, let me ask you this, right? I've heard this.
Well, they did that with Whiten a couple of years ago. Remember, he played out of position. I think it was he played at six. I think it was.
Well, you would know, you know, being an outside back, is it such a big deal moving from one side of the field to the other?
Well, that wasn't sort of the case with us because you played both sides of the field. You know, and you know, when you got left centre, right centre, it's very specific because, you know, it's the way they hold the ball. It's the way they step, that outside movement. And it becomes comfortable for some people to move a certain way. So, you know, I used to like that skip to the outside to the right, you know, rather than outside to the left. Holding the ball in your left hand is a little bit foreign if you're a right-hander. So all these things attribute to how you can actually get and move in amongst the opposition. So if you do go out of position, albeit you're a very good player, you might just feel so foreign. It might feel like your left hand, right hand is just, you know, completely opposite. Mm. So it's an important one to get right in that role because the difficult thing you want to do as a selector is select your best team and then fit them in. Mm. I think that sometimes the best thing to do is fit the best player for that position in that position because that's the prerogative of a coach to be able to find that, or then to be able to manipulate someone who's not 100%, you know, feeling comfortable in that position to make them feel comfortable in that position. Whether you get a license to roam, I don't know.
Because there's a lot of things that are instinctive in a player. For instance, you know, if you're running at full pelt, you naturally will favour a ball carrying hand.
Correct.
Offend, you will naturally favour perhaps a left as opposed to a right. You know, you're running at full pelt. Which foot do you naturally step off? Is it your left or your right? These are all factors.
Yeah, and when you look at sort of, you know, when the commentary is, you know, they've attacked their right-hand side, so you've gone left-hand side. Now, for most people, that's an easier pass, catching right, passing left. That's the more fluent pass because I suppose predominantly people are more right-handed than left-handed, if that's the word. So catch pass left or right, that's why it's just simple passing, simple passing, simple passing. Sometimes when you pass the other way, they miss and then all of a sudden, yeah, you're hitting balls on the shoulder or down low and it halts that momentum, that ability to catch pass going the opposite way. So look, there's a lot in this. It looks simple, but there's a lot in it to be able to get the right factors in the right spots to make a try look easy, look like it's been done in the training park.
In the next half hour on the Big Sports Breakfast, really looking forward to talking to Dan McKellar, Wallabies assistant coach ahead of the England Test match on Saturday. He'll give us some great insight into those injuries and potential selection and how the team is tracking ahead of the game over there in Perth. And Adam Pengelly will join us as well to talk rugby league and racing. That's all in the next half hour on the Big Sports Breakfast. Matt Burke and Ryan Phelan with you this morning. The Wimbledon results and how the Aussies have fared this morning. James Duckworth, he won the first set against Andy Murray, and it was all Andy Murray after that, just winning in the last 5 minutes or so. He won in four sets, so Andy Murray through. So not a great day for the Australians. Tanasi Kokkinakis, the only winner in straight sets over Kamil Majerak. He will now play Novak Djokovic, so a tough second round matchup for Tanasi Kokkinakis. Max Purcell lost. John Millman lost. Madison Inglis also lost, most of those in straight sets. In the match, Astra Sharma against Tayana Maria, that match has been paused at one apiece at the moment due to bad light. So that will resume tomorrow. And there's plenty of Aussies in action tonight. Nick Kyrgios will take on Paul Jubb from Great Britain. Alex de Minaur will take on Hugo Delian. Jordan Thompson will take on Roberto Buena Carbeas. And Alex Poprin will take on Hugo Gaston. And all of those Aussie men are favourites in their respective matches. In the women's draw, Zoe Hives, Daria Saville, Jamie Fawless, and also Isla Tomjanovic will be in action tonight. Really looking forward to Australia and England facing off for the Ella Mobbs Cup in a three-test series, which takes place this Saturday night in Perth. Dan McKellar, well, we recently know he departed Canberra after five seasons as coach of the Brumbies. That included two Super Rugby Australia Grand Finals and one title in 2020, a Super Rugby semi-final in 2019 and a Super Rugby Pacific semi-final in 2022. Now forwards coach for the Wallabies, he can be part of Australia returning to the glory days alongside coach Dave Rennie with a big step in the first test against England. And we're looking forward to having him on the show this morning.
Yeah, exactly right. Three test series against England, and we haven't won against those guys. Australia had since 2015 Rugby World Cup. And, you know, I'm looking at the outfit that England are bringing to Australia, and there's been plenty of injuries. The interesting one was they got 12 players from their final that happened the other day. Saracens up against Leicester. And I don't know if you saw the game, Ryan. It was an absolute kick fest. It was played at Twickenham. Great track. Leicester got up in the end 15 points to 12, but it was just a kickathon. And I'm just wondering if that's the tactics they're going to bring out to Australia and literally just trying to put us into submission, if that's the word, just play a territory game and not run the ball. But we get to ask Dan McKellar all these things because it's happening very soon, this weekend indeed.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And Dan is on the line. Good morning, Dan. How's the transition been to the new role?
Oh, pretty seamless, to be honest. Obviously, last year I did the same where I went from the Brumbies straight into the Wallaby role. So certainly second year around, consistency amongst the coaching group and consistency to a certain extent amongst selection makes it a little bit easier.
And I guess 15 Brumbies currently in this Wallaby squad, that would obviously help your role, that familiarity as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like we'll always say, we pick the players that we think are best suited to be the English team. And reality is, Brumbies performed pretty well this year, and players event selection off the back of it. But also really enjoying, you know, building relationships and working with guys from other franchises.
Dan, you must have been pretty happy from an Australian perspective to see how well the team's played through this Super Rugby campaign this year.
Yeah, really, really proud of how we performed, you know, and especially, I suppose, that last sort of 8 weeks. We had a couple of losses there where we played the grand finalists back to back, and then didn't perform well against Moana. But you know, reality is we're a decision away from being in the grand final, and you know, we thought we really could have challenged the Crusaders if we got a chance. But all that three and we missed out, but you know, certainly a good end to what was a really special 9 years of my life.
Yeah, and you've got the role at the Wallabies of forwards coach, and you've got some big boppers around there, which you'll need against this England outfit, who have got a fair crew coming down as well. The big question is Taniela Tupou. How's he going? Is he going to be a show for this first test, knowing that he had that calf injury, and from it seems like all reports, he may be just hurting a little bit.
Look, he's been working really hard since he sustained the injury, a number of weeks ago now, a couple of months to be honest, but. Yeah, so he's going to be touch and go. We'll see how he performs over the next couple of days. Understanding that it's a long test campaign this year. It's the first test in the series, and to put him in a position where he'd be high risk, would be crazy. But yeah. Look, if he's fit and available, he's certainly a player that can that brings a point of difference and can really challenge the English in areas that they consider to be strength.
And you're happy for him to hang on the wing and throw that little last pass to Marika Korobetti like he did last year?
Yeah, it's pretty special, wasn't it?
Wasn't it? Great. Like,
just seeing a guy who's about 135 kilos, big powerful unit, with silky skill down the edge there against the South African sides, and Marika was good enough to finish it off. But and that's the thing with Taniela, he's probably not your traditional tight head prop. He brings a skill set that's very unique and is certainly very effective.
Do you understand history as well, this group, or are they sort of, taking it, the cliche, one game at a time? Because, England, and as you would have been a part of it last year overseas, and then 2015 was the last time we won, I suppose the only one spruiking that is Eddie Jones, isn't he? He's the one sort of reminding everyone about that. Does that come into play with your mentality and leading up to this game?
Oh, look, it's not something that we've spoken about as a group, certainly in the back of your mind, that, the English have had a run of victories against the Wallabies since that World Cup performance back in 2015. And, we're keen to beat the English on any given day. So, it's a rivalry that goes back many, many years. And, getting in a three-test series, getting a result and building momentum in that first test sets you up for the rest of the series. At the same time, for us, it obviously gets the monkey off the back.
Mm. So England have been here for a little over a month. What's been Australia's preparation? When do you go to Perth, and how have things been in camp, and how we've been preparing ahead of this test?
Yeah, camp environment has been superb, to be honest. We're up at Twin Waters, which is a one-stop shop. So we've got our gym, we've got our training field, meeting rooms, everything is right on our doorstep. So it's perfect for preparation. I suppose if there's a positive to being knocked out in the semi of the Super Rugby tournament, it allowed us to get in the camp a little bit earlier to prepare for the England series, which we spent the last couple of weeks up here, and big training day today, recovery day tomorrow, short and sharp session on Thursday before we fly over on Thursday afternoon to Perth to get ready for the game on Saturday night. So, there's certainly there's been a whole lot of information, detail, a lot of physical preparation to get them ready for Test rugby. But we won't be perfect on Saturday night, but we're certainly well prepared. There'll be zero excuses.
Would you say, Dan, the most exciting thing about this squad is the competitiveness in amongst the positions for a starting spot?
Yeah, I think that's accurate, mate. I think for the first time in a long while, we're starting to build real depth in a number of positions, in key positions. You look at the 10 position, you've got three good 10s, obviously two very experienced 10s and a young bloke in Noel Olisio. Front row, back row, there's tremendous competition there, outside backs, which is healthy. Now, that's what you need. If you want to be a world-class international side, you need a core group of world-class players, and you need a core group of players that are constantly challenging, putting pressure on each other, and we feel like we're building that.
Is Will Skelton still in the mix, mate? Obviously, with the old or revised Gitto law, the three backs came in as the overseas players. Will has been going tremendously well overseas. La Rochelle won the Heineken Cup. Is he still in the frame for an Aussie jersey?
Yeah, he certainly is. It's the thinking was he's come off the back of a really long French series this year, and And, yeah, it was bringing three guys in. Obviously, Dave and the selectors have chosen the three guys from the Japan League. But we'll, again, you know, similar to Taniela, big man with a point of difference. He came into our group on the spring tour last year and fit in really well, you know, really good character, and brings a whole lot of physicality and just a real presence to our group. So, yeah, he's certainly going to come into consideration the back end of this year and well and truly moving to the World Cup next year.
Hey, Dan, I'm guessing you watched State of Origin with interest on Sunday evening, because I noticed Matt Ballan, who is an assistant coach with the Queensland side, was there in camp with yourself and Dave Rennie. Just talk about that relationship.
Yeah, passionate Queenslander, so disappointed with the performance or the result. But, you know, New South Wales are always going to bounce back. And, yeah, it was great having Matty Ballan in last week. Look, any time there's crossover between codes and sports to just bounce ideas around, obviously there's a lot of similarities between rugby league and rugby union. And, you know, myself, Wisey, certainly a very passionate rugby league man as well. And Prince is around in his New South Wales jersey. And Dave, you know, obviously has enormous respect for the NRL as a competition. So, no, it was great. You know, Matty's a really good fella and was genuinely interested in how we do things. You know, wanted to sit down in front of the laptop and talk about attack and defence and was, you know, really observing closely how we train. And that's what you get out of it as a coach whenever you do any personal development. A lot of the time it's how coaches present and run their meetings and engage with their players. You know, there's a lot of things that you can take away from it. So, no, it was good to have him around and hopefully you know, they'll repay the favour and we'll get into the Bronx over the next couple of months.
Yes, I can only assume that you're a passionate Queenslander because you and I are from the same hometown of Ayre.
Yeah, mate. Phelan's Pies.
Phelan's Pies, yes. And your parents, they ran the Queen's Hotel in Ayre.
They did, yeah. No, Mum and Dad had the Queen's. They bought it back in 1990. It was a three-year project and they sold it 16 years later. So, but they're still in the Burdekin and I get up there around Christmas time and that sort of thing. But, mate, I clearly remember ducking down to Phelan's Pies and knocking out three or four for lunch.
or on the way home from the pub.
Back.
They're good. Yeah, the pasties with peas are pretty hard to beat as well. No, it's good to see a fellow Air Cane Toad joining us this morning. But obviously back on the subject of the test this weekend, what's the feeling amongst the group? Obviously, there's a lot of excitement with some new blood coming through, but obviously a lot of excitement that an old foe like England, they're there to be beaten.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? You know, to be honest, they're pretty relaxed. You know, we're certainly not playing the game too early in the week, which is a good thing. You know, we've got to make sure we conserve that nervous energy and emotion. But, you know, it all comes down to our preparation, and so far it's been excellent over the last 2 weeks. We've got to have a really good training couple of days this week, and then off the back of your preparation, you go into the game knowing you've ticked all the boxes, you're clear between the ears, and you can just go out there and play footy and play with genuine physicality, and that's what we're going to need to do against the English. We've got to win that physical contest and take our opportunities when they come, because they'll be rare. But, you know, overall, there's real excitement. Australia versus England, three-test series. And obviously, he brings a real flyer to the contest as well, being a coach in the opposition. So, yeah, can't wait to rip in.
Yeah, tell me, just before I let you go, Dan, Suliasi Vunivalu has had a tough run of it since he came across from rugby league. He's in the camp now for the first time in a legitimate sense. How good is it watching him run around and what's he bringing to the team?
Yeah, incredible athlete. Great aerial skills. And he's just had an unfortunate run of injuries where he hasn't been able to string back-to-back games. And he managed to get a few games together before he came to camp. And now, you know, I think it's just about increasing knowledge in his detail, coaching him closely and just giving him confidence to use skills that come naturally to him. You know, you don't even think, gee, should I go looking for the ball? Should I hold him on my wing? That sort of thing. If he thinks or sees an opportunity, then back himself and go and take it. Because, you know, if you get him one-on-one with a tight forward, he's going to hurt them. So, I think it's exciting for him. He's in really good shape. Hamstrings are to be, and now he can just go out there and learn and get better and apply what he brings because of the natural talent he has. That's pretty scary.
Well, Dan, we're looking forward to the first test of the Ella Mobbs Cup this weekend against England. And I know you and the group will be as well. Good luck with the preparation ahead of that match, and hopefully we'll get a 3-0 result. But let's start with Saturday night. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, fellas. Always a pleasure. Cheers.
Dan McKellar joining us this morning, the Wallabies assistant coach, the forwards coach. And what did you make of that, I guess, with obviously what you've will gather out of that with team selections? You know, I know he can't say too much, but sounds like we'll field a pretty handy side.
It'll be good. I mean, no doubt about it, it'll be a good team. And that competition for spots, as we mentioned, and as Dan mentioned, I think the biggest one is the Taniela Tupou. I think I get the feeling out of that, you know, with the deck, obviously at Optus was a little bit rough underfoot at the moment, and the pressure that goes through that scrum, I think they may put him in cotton wool this week. I don't think they will. They've got enough other players around there, Alan Alatoa and crew, to maybe fill the void, because you want him playing. As we said, when he lurks on the outside and he throws that no-look pass to Marika Korobetti, he's got skills that are not, I suppose, normally associated with a front rower. He has the ability to run, step, pass, maybe even chip and chase, you know. And he's got that X factor about him. So you need him to play.
From the Sydney Morning Herald, Adam Pengelly, good morning.
Morning, Ryan. Morning, Berkey. I need to learn more about these Phelan's pies, Ryan.
Oh, mate, I can tell you what, they're pretty good. Pasty with peas, I recommend highly as well, if you ever get up in the Burdekin.
But is this on the way home from the pub afterwards? Like, are you still open at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock
no,
at night?
No.
Mate, that's when you do most of your business.
Daytime, stick them in the freezer. They're still good even when you stick them in
ready
the oven
go.
Late at night. Anyway, enough about that. Adam, sad news with champion stallion, not a single doubt, passing away.
Yeah, horrible news, Ryan. That was announced by Arrowfield late yesterday. His health had been on decline for a couple of years, it must be said. He was retired from stud duty a couple of years ago due to a lung problem, but unfortunately, Arrowfield announced he'd succumbed to that over the course of the last few days. So when you look at his career, like what a stallion he's been. Obviously, started his career in the early 2000s as a stallion. And look at some of the horses he sired. Like, he's obviously great with the two-year-olds with Extreme Choice and Fun. And I remember Miracles of Life, who won that amazing Blue Diamond going back way back when. And then you've got a horse like Single Gaze, who ran in both a Golden Slipper and a Melbourne Cup. So he had a lot of versatility about his his stallion career, 16 Group 1 winners in total, and going to be a massive loss to, obviously, Arrowfield. And I know he hasn't sired a horse for a couple of years now, but just a terrible loss for the Australian racing industry.
It's that legacy, isn't it, that you lose on the way through the sad day. Now, tell me about Very Elegant, potentially kicking off a European campaign early August.
Yeah, I found this fascinating, Berkey. She's obviously been settling over there in her new French confines over there in Chanty, and her trainer over there sort of suggested there's a chance they might kick off a European campaign in the first week of August with a Group 1 race at Deauville, which I think is probably a little bit earlier than most people expected. So I can only read between the lines and say she's doing really well over there. Obviously, she settled into being over in France the last month or two, and it's great to see her get to the racetrack. She can manage that in the next sort of 5 or 6 weeks. I really want to see her do well over there. I don't want to see her reputation sort of tarnished or diminished by having a flat campaign to finish off her career. Obviously, we've got to protect her legacy over here in Australia. I know there's a bit of a disagreement between the owners and Chris Waller about whether she should continue to race on. The owners obviously said they wanted to send her over to Europe and try and target the after triumph. Let's hope she can get there. Let's hope she can do Australia proud on the lead up to that race.
Robert Heathcote was the Tats Tiara winning trainer on Saturday. He copped a huge fine during the carnival, which he's set to appeal.
Yeah, that's right, Ryan. Come back to that Hemoplex saga, going back to that race meeting at Doomben in April. We had all those runners, remember, sensationally scratched on the morning of the race meeting when stewards weren't satisfied they'd been treated with his Hemoplex substance. Robert's going to appeal that fine. Star Tonte is actually one of those horses who was scratched on race morning at Doomben in April, going back a couple of months ago now. So Robert's quite vocal in saying he's not a cheat. Obviously, had no issues with this product. He obviously wasn't recorded properly in the treatment book, but the stewards still handed down a pretty significant fine of $34,000. And he's going to plan to appeal those fines.
And Steve Turnbull, who's an absolute legend.
This was your hero
He was my hero yesterday on Heroes and Villains. 4,000 winners. Gee, when you think about it, the amount of work and early mornings that goes into that.
Yeah, it was remiss of me, Ryan, not to mention on the program yesterday. I know you mentioned it briefly, but to get 4,000 winners is a huge, huge achievement. The thing I loved best about it was he trained it in the last race of the night at Parkes on a low-key Saturday night with his son Mitch driving, who racked up his 400th winner alone himself in the driver's seat. So what a great story for Harness Racing. He's been a great ambassador for the industry for many, many years, and I think it's going to go down in history. 4,000 winners, huge achievement.
Yeah, he was like a cricketer on 99 for a while there, and Harness Racing New South Wales kept putting out tweets saying today's going to be the day he's going to break it.
Hanging on.
I think they were putting on the mock for a while, but it was fitting that he did it with his son, as you mentioned. So congratulations to Steve and his family. A lovely family they are indeed. All right, Adam, thanks for joining us, mate. We'll chat to you later in the week.
Thanks, guys.
A big hour still to come here on the Big Sports Breakfast. Looking forward to talking to Clint Gutherson coming up just after the news, and Chris Lawrence after 7:30 as well, former West Tigers centre and star. He will be with us, and Brad Davidson just before 8 o'clock as well. That's still to come in the next hour on the Big Sports Breakfast. Matt Burke and Ryan Phelan in for the boys this morning.